This is the Pure Green Podcast, episode 10. Hippocrates said, "Let food be thy medicine, and medicine be thy food." The burden of proof certainly lies in the wisdom of these words. More and more, I meet people who had lived with illness or disease for years, and the solution, at least for them, lay in changing their diet. In this week's interview with the celebrated Lindsay Love, the creator of the food blog Dolly and Oatmeal, we explore just that and how by documenting her solution, healthy recipes, she crafted a following and now a living. I'm Celine McKay and you're listening to the Pure Green Podcast. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the podcast. It's number 10. I'm not sure why, but that feels like a milestone of some sort. So thank you for all your support and feedback so far. There's a few more 5-star reviews on iTunes, and seeing them leaves me beaming from ear to ear. So thank you again. What I absolutely love about the internet is that it removes so many barriers. You can follow nearly any passion, fulfill so many dreams, and create a myriad of different careers for yourself, thanks to this beautiful, shining, global community we call the internet. Pure Green is evidence of that, and so is today's guest, Lindsay Love of the popular food blog Dolly and Oatmeal. Lindsay, who struggled pretty well her whole life with generally feeling unwell, found a passion in the solution, which was to change her diet to exclude gluten and dairy. She slowly learned how to prepare food for herself that her body didn't protest to and built a bank of recipes as she went. Then, in a stroke of fate or genius, her now husband purchased a domain name and built her a website, gifted it to her, and well, the rest is history. Lindsay has grown Dolly and Oatmeal into a well-loved haven of gorgeous food photography and well-loved recipes. Her blog and some freelance work she has as a result of it is how she now makes her living, and she's taken it so far as to land her first cookbook. It's a beautiful thing to be able to find your passion and live and breathe it every day. We talk about that quite a lot in the episode, and there's some great pieces of advice if you're out there listening, hoping to do the same. If you follow Pure Green, then perhaps you also recognize Lindsay as one of the community leaders behind our Pure Green in Season project. If not, visit the show notes for links at puregreenmag.com/podcast/Lindsay. Pure Green in Season is about to relaunch as of the time of this recording with a much larger purpose. With the help of our community, we're compiling recipes into a collaborative anthology of seasonal cooking. It's an ambitious piece of work and inspired by the talent of our community and people like Lindsay, and the result will be a real printed hardcover book just oozing in gorgeous inspiration. Again, check out the show notes for more details, especially how to submit your own recipe for a chance to be included in this crazy, awesome book. So, without further delay, let's go to our interview. Here's Lindsay. Why don't you help us get to know you a little bit? Like, who is Lindsay Love? It's such a great name, by the way.
well, it's funny because my maiden name is Lindsay Silverman. So that's, you know, I guess my married name. But who is Lindsay Love? I'm from New York with my parents who have been, you know, third, fourth generation immigrants, I guess. So, you know, we have this long kind of lineage of people coming off the boat and into Manhattan. And even though I grew up outside of Manhattan, you know, I feel like this connection and history with the city and the outlying boroughs. And so I guess that's formed my younger years of growing up out on Long Island and with a close-knit family out there, and always establish that connection and keep that connection. What I'm trying to say is family is really important to me, and establishing memories and traditions, and part of that has been, you know, through food and cooking together. And, you know, my grandparents weren't, you know, the best cooks, but the things that we did share and the meals that we did have together were really meaningful. And so the times that we did spend together, which were holidays and birthdays and, you know, those kinds of occasions, grew into something with deep, you know, that had very deep meaning for me.
So then where did you go from there?
Well, after high school, I decided that I was going to take time, and that because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I had, you know, various interests and things, but what I really wanted to do was to make some money and see who I was going to be and see what interested me and go from there. So I took a job at, you know, as a retail assistant. I worked at Steve Madden and sold shoes. And so I did that for, I guess, like 2 years. And I loved going into the city and exploring and, you know, taking in museums and going and eating different kinds of things and being around, you know, different cultures and different kinds of people and different neighborhoods. And mm-hmm. even though I'd grown up in this, you know, suburb of the city and loved, you know, nature and all that, but there, I felt like there was so much more, I guess, to explore. So that's what I did. And then I guess I always had a love for history and knowing where my family came from, and kind of loved always putting the pieces together, like puzzle pieces, and figuring it all out. And I guess that's why I went and I started studying history. I guess that, you know, stemmed from, you know, just always hearing my grandfather came over, he would show me pictures of when he came over from Ellis Island, and, you know, my grandparents on my mom's side would tell us stories how, you know, their grandparents came over after the potato famine in Ireland. And so I loved kind of seeing where I fit into that, I guess, and how we all kind of came to be. And I thought I wanted to be like a history professor, and I wanted to go get my master's and my doctorate. But I guess it was my sophomore year, junior year in college, I said to myself, let me, you know, dip my toe in the teaching pool and see what it's all about. So I started teaching part-time and, you know, really love just working with students and collaborating with other teachers and, you know, being creative with like curriculum and all that kind of stuff. So, so after graduating college, I was teaching for a while and then went to Long Island University to get my master's in early childhood special education. I had grown up kind of having certain reading disabilities and such, so I guess I gravitated towards, you know, a population of special ed kids. And then started substituting, mainly because I had started my blog. It'll be 2 years at the end of January. And I kind of was debating where I wanted to go in life and what route I was going to take. And so subbing kind of allowed me to, you know, do something that I was passionate about. So that's kind of where I'm at now.
Right. Yeah. So you're not a teacher right now.
No.
Like you could be, but you're not.
Right.
You've decided to pursue something different.
Yeah.
So, which is Dolly and Oatmeal.
Yes.
And that's your blog.
Yes.
That you said you've written for 2 years. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you.
So what would you say then were the main events or things in your life that led you to start Dolly and Oatmeal in the first place?
I think what was a really poignant time was, I mean, it's kind of been like that through, I guess, since I was young. I've always had these, I guess, issues with dairy products. It's never agreed with me, but it's something that I was like, oh, you know, it'll be fine. I'll just eat a little bit of it. Also just having really high highs and low lows. Like I would eat something and be fine, and then I'd be hungry 2 seconds later. And I kind of went through that cycle for most of my life. So, and, you know, I guess when you're in that kind of mode, and people, you know, my parents and, you know, friends and everything, they would kind of help me out and try to, you know, give me the assistance I needed. But at the end, it was something that I needed to say, this isn't, you know, this doesn't feel right with me. And so that's when I went to go see a nutritionist, because things were just escalating, and I was just feeling worse and worse. So basically she said to me, you're never eating bread again. And, you know, dairy is inflammatory for you. And obviously you've felt that and you can see that, and you should stay away from it. So that's basically where I was 5 years ago, again in January. And so leading up to, I guess, deli and oatmeal for 3 years, I was, you know, exploring what that meant to be gluten-free and dairy-free, and kind of navigating it and, you know, making mistakes and mm-hmm. Not really knowing where to go. Of course, I had my nutritionist there to, you know, ask for help in certain kinds of ways. But, you know, when you're out to dinner with your friends, or you're, you know, I was dating my husband right now. I was dating him at the time, and, you know, going out to dinner and not having options, and, you know, it's just, I guess, you know, a hindrance on your young life or mm-hmm. your social life and that kind of stuff. So, I started, just having like a collection, not even on my blog, but just a collection of recipes, like go-tos that, yep. That I would always make, especially on like a Sunday night, because I was working and going to school full time, and I didn't really have, you know, any time during the week to really prepare meals for myself. So I started, you know, like writing them as like Word documents on my computer, or just jotting them down like as notes. And from there, you know, they would turn into recipes, and I would go back to them and, you know, add a spice here, or if something didn't agree with me, I would, you know, cut that out. And so, yeah, that's kind of where it all started. And my husband, who was my fiance at the time, he's much more technologically savvy than I am. He had made a WordPress page, and, you know, bought a domain for me and gave it to me for Christmas. So,
oh, yeah, that's so awesome.
Yeah. It was very sweet. At the time, I'm like, what are you doing to me? This is so much pressure. But now I thank him all the time. So,
yeah, I'm sure. So you went to a nutritionist who said no more bread ever. That's pretty extreme.
Yeah.
Like, so what did she base that on? Like, did you go through tests to figure out you were gluten intolerant, or did she just assume, like, was there something about, you know, your reactions that made her think gluten might be a problem?
Basically, I really liked her approach to it, because it wasn't like, eat this, don't eat this, eat more of this, but cut that out entirely. What she did was she had me go through my, like, what I eat every day and what, you know, and then she looked at the patterns, and the pattern of what I was eating was mostly carbs, and they were carbs that had, you know, high glycemic index. So I was going on these high highs, and then I would totally crash. So it's kind of like, you know, like a sugar high, basically.
Okay.
So, you know, I'd be eating like a bagel for breakfast, or English muffin for breakfast. And then for lunch, I'd have a sandwich. And then for dinner, I'd, you know, have a slice of pizza or whatever it was. And she was just like, you know, what you crave and what you love to go to, which is bread and cheese my entire life. She said, those are the things that are hurting you the most. So that's basically where she came from. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's so crushing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Bread is, you know, I try and cut it back, and I do a good job, but then, you know,
it's so good.
I just want
it. I know.
It.
Even just the smell of it, it's just so good.
Oh, it's got to be torture.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So bread and cheese.
Bread
bye-bye.
And cheese. Bye-bye. No
yeah.
more. Yet.
Yeah. Oh, ouch. So, okay. But, you know, it's a lot easier to make that switch when it's not just for life. It, you know, it's for your health.
Right.
It directly benefits how you feel every day. So you know, that definitely helps
right.
make that transition. So then your recipes, You said that you basically were creating these recipes as a way to help yourself out, mm-hmm. you know, with your scheduling and with figuring out what to eat. And then, so then your recipes, then you got more proficient at doing that. And eventually that is what became Dolly and Oatmeal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So why Dolly and Oatmeal? I sort of feel like there must be a story behind that.
Actually it's, my mom always called me Dolly. She still calls me that. And oatmeal, when I was younger, and even now, I've eaten it, like, religiously for breakfast every morning. So it just kind of fit. It was a way, I guess, to connect, you know, I guess who I was and then what I really love to eat. And I just kind of like the two names together, if that makes sense. And it's just, I don't know, they mean something to me in the end of the day, I guess. So, yeah.
And is that the domain that your husband registered for?
Yeah, he knew it. So I was like, all right, I can't change it now. No, but it was good. He made a good choice.
Yeah, absolutely. And so then now you're 2 years in, you've had time to evolve and to more firmly root yourself in how you eat now. Mm-hmm. So what would you say your food philosophy is now?
I mean, obviously it's based in a gluten-free and dairy-free lifestyle, but what I surround myself every day with is, produce, fresh seasonal produce. And so I would say that's like my main focus on, and that's how I eat every day. It's not just, you know, one of those like in vogue, you know, kind of ideas, but it's something that I really kind of believe in and that I practice every day. And, you know, sometimes of course I'm buying, you know, something that's not in season, but for the most part, I try to have a good idea of what, you know, local growers are growing and what they have at the farmer's market. And, you know, sometimes it's easier to get there on days than others, but for the most part, it's really interesting. If I don't go to the farmer's market, and I'm just grocery shopping, it's really easy to, I guess, lose sight of what's fresh and seasonal and mm-hmm. what's being grown in the moment. So, obviously, I do what I can to eat the best that I can in terms of seasonal food. But, you know, obviously there are days or weeks I don't have time to go to the farmer's market or prepare, you know, the most seasonal meal. But yeah, I feel like that's my philosophy both on my blog and in my life. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Dolly and Oatmeal has become your full-time job,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. I mean, I work a bunch of freelance jobs on the side as
okay.
well. So I've done like food photography and styling and product photography and things like that, recipe development.
Okay. Now, are you the one that takes photos for Dolly and Oatmeal
yeah.
or does your husband too? You're, okay.
Yeah.
Now, am I mistaken? Is your husband's a photographer as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He's not professionally a photographer right now.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he was doing photography. He also he was also a cinematographer like back in the day. But yeah, so he's deeply entrenched in the film world.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to dig into that a little
mm-hmm.
bit,
sure.
but just before, I wanted to ask you about your process when you're developing a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that like for you? Like how, you know, what is your creative process like and where does the ideas, where do they come from and how does that become a recipe?
A lot of times, I mean, during the summer, I think it's really easy to be inspired because you're outside all the time. You know, you're just like, I feel like I'm always like in nature and I'm always like inspired by sunshine and green leaves and flowers and textures and smells and all these kinds of things. And in the winter, it's kind of like, okay, you know, a stew, a soup, maybe a sandwich or something hearty, something that feels good. But a lot of times, so I guess it's the season first. And then second, a lot of times it's, either recipes that I've made in the past when I was younger with my family that I want to recreate and make into something that is dairy-free or gluten-free. Other times it's something I've seen on like a menu at a restaurant. Perhaps I can't eat it, perhaps I can, and I just want to share it with an audience. And then others, like I said, you know, the season, getting back to, you know, the seasonal aspect of it is going to the farmer's market and just picking up, like, you know, a basket of blackberries that look amazing and saying, like, all right, I'm going to eat half of these. What am I going to do with the other half? Or I'm going to buy, you know, more than 2 pints of them. What am I going to do with the rest? So, so yeah, I think it's a combination of all of them or just one of them sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah. And then from there, the process is just what tastes, what kind of flavors do I like? And what do I think, you know, tastes good together, and adding different spices. And sometimes, you know, looking at, you know, cookbooks and seeing how, what different ways to prepare it, because I'm not a trained chef at all. And I wouldn't, you know, feel comfortable sitting here saying that I know exactly what to do with, you know, or how to prepare every kind of meal that there is. But a lot of inspiration comes from cookbooks as well, and flavor pairings and different kinds of things. So, yeah, or different techniques and stuff. So,
Yeah, I mean, is there someone in your life who's a really good cook? Because, I mean, I am a proficient cook in the kitchen. I'm not a creative cook,
yeah,
though. I can follow a recipe. I can, you know, and I can execute it, and it tastes good. And that just, you know, that in and of itself was a skill that, for me, took a little while.
Yeah.
And, you know, my husband, Jonathan, who's the food editor for Pure Green, he creates our recipes. For him, it's so different.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just like a, something's inspiration strikes and it all just falls together,
yeah,
you know, and I'm just like, I cannot do that. So, you know, it's funny how it works so differently for us. And so for you, where would you say that you learned about pairing, you know, like you said, like what spices go well together, or, you know, different things, like where do you even start? Did your mom, was she a great cook, or your dad, or is it just something you learned by trial and error?
You know, my mom, if she's going to listen to this, I'm sorry, but she's not, like, the best cook. I you know, I don't think she really, like, enjoyed it. My dad, on the other hand, he was, he had, you know, recipes passed down from his family, so he would make, like, a couple things. But I was told my great-grandmother was a great baker, but honestly, I think a lot of, it's not even intuition, but there are certain things that I like, and then from there, I kind of add on to them. Or from recipes that I read, I see, oh, they're using fennel in that. Let me see what that tastes like. Because, you know, smelling a fennel seed and then chewing a fennel seed are two different things. So, you know, it's just you know, getting in touch with all of your senses too, I think is really important, that like what you're smelling sometimes isn't what you're tasting, or what you're tasting isn't what you're smelling. And so, yeah, I think that's been like a lesson is reading it, smelling it, tasting it, cooking with it, just exploring, you know, with different, you know, spices and flavors and, ingredients and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, and then always coming back to that place where you're comfortable and those flavors that you love, to ground you, I suppose, like throughout that process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then once you've got your recipe, you develop it, you style it, you do the shooting as well.
Yeah.
So I mean, what was your learning curve like in that process? Because, I mean, it looks – I know that you are self-taught and this is all, you know, but it executes extremely well on your blog. You're very talented at what you do. And so I'm curious to know what it was like to sort of, you know, that learning curve and to get to the place where you are now.
I guess, you know, I relied a lot on my husband because he was the photographer. I always had like the interest in it. I would always ask. I mean, I remember when we first started dating, I had so many questions for him. On our, like, our first date, he brought, like, a bag full of cameras and was explaining, you know, how this one works and apertures and all this kind of stuff that I had no idea about. I was always interested. I always wanted to learn about it, but I had no idea about it. And so, yeah, when I first started just shooting the recipes, I was using my mom's. She had given me her old Nikon camera. And my husband had a bunch of different lenses for the camera that I was just experimenting with. And he would give me tips here and there. But there were just, I guess a bunch of different blogs that I just always like gravitated towards, like Heidi Swanson's 101 cookbooks. I loved, mm-hmm. I could get lost, you know, in her recipes, not only, mm-hmm. You know, not only the recipes, but her photos of them. And I just fell in love with the easy kind of breezy way that she approached everything. And so, yeah, I guess I learned from just being observant and looking and asking my husband a lot of questions and then relying mm-hmm. on my style, I guess, and what I liked seeing and what I thought would highlight the food in a way that people would not only say, oh, that's pretty, but, oh, like, you know, she did that in her home, in her kitchen. Like, I can do mm-hmm. that too. So that was a really important piece too. So making it accessible and approachable. I know, like, you know, glossy magazines and sometimes highly stylized, you know, photos too can be a little off-putting to people. They're like, mm-hmm. oh, you're making it, you know, look so pretty, or how am I supposed to do the same? But I think, you know, home cooking and people making it look, you know, pretty and accessible is really important in people getting back into the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's definitely true. And I think you've certainly accomplished that style somewhere between, you know, like the over-stylized, too pretty, and, you know, too home-cooked.
Yeah.
Like you're, because it still has to be aspirational for you to find it inspiring, right?
Right, absolutely.
So, yeah, no, you've done a fantastic job of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I really do, I mean, I know from experience of food and prop styling, it's not easy unless you have a real knack for it, which you obviously do. So do you have any pieces of advice? You know, so like, yeah, sorry, I'll let you answer that question first.
I would say, you know, like if you have a style and you like your style, stick true to your style. I mm-hmm. feel like a lot of people, or I can assume that a lot of people could get like, you know, caught up in, making food look like how they think people want it to look instead of it just being what it is. So, you know, if there are crumbs falling off your bread, it doesn't need to be, you know, swept away. I think that gives it more of like an intimate kind of homey feel. Like, you know, this person just sliced this, you know, sandwich or, you know, piece of bread and then they're going to eat it and enjoy it. And, you know, same with, you know, if you're making a salad and there's some leaves falling over and, you know, it's on the table, I feel like that gives, it more depth. And so that's, I guess, one tip. And then also just, I think for me, simple is best. I tend to, smaller food portions. Like even when I go out to eat, you know, I really don't like when they have like a mound of food like on a plate. It doesn't like appeal to me. So I always try to, I think, you know, smaller portions, especially when you're shooting them, it always photographs better instead of like a heaping pile of food. And just being kind of, I guess, delicate with it. That's, I guess, my approach to it.
For sure. Those things are all, they're all very true. And it's funny because the most difficult shoot that I ever had for Pure Green was a salad shoot, uh-huh. and we wanted to not use plates. And it was funny because it really struck me, I wasn't expecting this, that the messiness of it, yeah. you know, the perfectly imperfect look uh-huh. is almost harder than the perfect
look. It totally
look.
Is, yeah. I agree.
That was a real eye-opener for me. And I mean, in the end, we pulled it off and I was happy with yeah. it. But wow, it was funny. Yeah. But, you know, I love that too. I love the hominess of, you know, food photography and, you know, that style. And I mean, for us, we're cracking pepper and sweeping crumbs
right,
everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like the kind of like it's. So, yeah, for sure. So then where do you find your props? Normally, like, do you seek them out or you just use stuff around the house? Or
I mean, I've always kind of collected things. My mom, when I was younger, she was an antique dealer, so you know, we would always have things around the house that you know, were different. You know, people would come over to my house and say, "What is that for?" It was like an apple, you know, ladder that
right.
That stood in the corner of our kitchen, you know. So, yeah, I guess. She always inspired me. Like, we always had different pieces, and she would always be moving things around our house and changing things up. And so, I guess I always kind of like, she always took me to antique shows and everything. And even from, like a young age, when I was like a teenager, I would always pick up certain things like, either like mirrors or shelves. And so like, I kind of have these collected items over years. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, I've had a bunch of pieces, like the table that I use. I was actually, my mom had, picked it up at an antique show. And it was in our house for a really long time. And when I finally moved out, I said, I'm going to take it. Is that okay? And I don't have a dining room table. So, so yeah, that table is been with me for a really long time. And then you know, they're obviously Brooklyn Flea is a big place to pick up you know, used items. And I mean my ceramics that I use all the time, I have gotten in California. They're made by this amazing ceramicist. Her name's Delphine. She runs Humble Ceramics, if you've ever heard of them. Mm-hmm. So I love her pieces. And unfortunately, she doesn't ship them from her website. So, but I have my brother lives out there, so he'll ship me pieces from time to time. So, but I'm always just like on the lookout really wherever I'm going, whether it's like, like a garden shop. I always love like, you know what they use under the planters,
right?
Like yeah. even just like tins like that, I'll always mm-hmm. like pick up. And they're inexpensive too, which is cool. But they always give like a really good backdrop to your food, you know. So I always mm-hmm. try to keep it simple, but also, you know, have character.
Mm-hmm. And so then with your, you know, where you can tell that you always take the images in a similar spot.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just using your own wall backdrop. You're not going you're doing anything else in natural light, obviously
mm-hmm.
is. Yeah. And what lens do you shoot with usually? Sorry, I'm getting geeky
about
this.
That's okay. I usually use a 50 millimeter, lens for my camera. Sometimes my husband has an 85 millimeter, so I'll use that from time to time, but I'm pretty comfortable with the 50 millimeter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good
yeah,
one for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Pretty much gives me everything I need. So yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier that you were inspired a lot by the seasons and by the smell and the taste and, you know, of your surroundings
mm-hmm.
depending on the time of year. Is there anything else that you would say your main inspiration comes from?
I guess what I'm in the mood to eat. You know, sometimes you know, whether it's, you know, eating a sandwich or, you know, making something chocolatey or, you know, I guess I'm just, you know, kind of just going with what I'm feeling at the moment. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes, you know, if somebody like asks me to make something. But other than that, I'm pretty kind of, I guess, I don't know, low key about it, or I just, it's not thoughtless, but I guess I don't overthink it, because I feel like it could drive me crazy. So I definitely don't overthink what I'm eating on a daily basis or what I'm going to make for the blog. I definitely keep within, obviously, a certain diet, but I guess that's, I'm sorry. I wish I had a better answer for you.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Absolutely. You're just inspired by the everyday, which is really good. Would you say, who would you say have been the most positive or impactful influences on your life?
Oh my gosh. There's so many. I would say definitely, my parents. They've always, inspired me to, be who I wanted to be and not be afraid of certain things or be okay with, not giving up, but pursuing something that, that's going to, in the end, going to make you happy. So I would say them totally. And my brother is a huge inspiration. He's always been like an artist, since we were kids, and he's my big brother. So I always looked up to him, and he's an illustrator. So he's like, you could just give him like a scrap of paper and he'll draw this masterpiece. So I've always, looked up to him in terms of like, he's so creative and, he has so many talents and everything. So, definitely him. But, my husband, obviously without him, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing, but
yeah.
I could go on forever.
Yeah. No, well, thank you for sharing that. So, this is an interesting question. It's one that I'm starting to ask a lot of people that I come across and meet, because, I'm so interested in learning about what makes people feel fulfilled and succeed. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I'm trying to develop for myself right now is something that I call an excellence strategy, which would be habits or processes that I use to help me become a better and more successful person in a way that's meaningful to me. So do you have anything that you do regularly that gives you what you feel is an edge to succeed or to improve or do better?
I feel like I feel like I always strive to be, I know it sounds really cheesy, but to be like a better person. So I always know that there can be improvements in what I'm doing. So let's say if I'm going to start off my day, I think it's really important to start the day like in a positive way. So, I've been doing yoga for a really long time, but it's always been kind of off, on and off. I'm in my early 30s. I think it's really important to always, be flexible, and not just in a physical sense, but also, mentally, emotionally. And so I really feel like starting my day with yoga is always, that just makes me feel good throughout the rest of the day. I have better clarity and all that. But also I've been trying to meditate. I know it, like people say, oh, I meditate. And I sat there and I said, like, how do you meditate? And I actually Googled it because I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And so, trying to just, have a moment of just peace in the morning, also has kind really been helpful. So I would say yoga and meditation. Especially living in the city, I just feel like it starts my day in a really positive way.
Right. So you've been practicing yoga long enough that you can just do it within your own home by yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I have a yoga studio down the street, but I get up early and I just like getting up early first thing. And
I'm the same as you. you know, meditation comes up a lot, especially when I ask questions like this. I mean, meditation mm-hmm. seems to be at the root of a lot of people's success yeah. and sense of fulfillment. And like you, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's really, you know, it was great. It felt great to know, but at the same time, it left me asking so many more questions.
Absolutely.
And it is a tricky one for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I recently was introduced to a resource that I've been trying out called Life Flow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an auditory, I guess, sound that sort of puts your brain sort of in the parasympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of kickstarts the whole process. And I've been finding that really helpful because that gives me something to focus on.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's that single point of focus,
mm-hmm.
which otherwise is so elusive for me. So
right.
That was a really helpful resource for me.
That's awesome, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what seasoned meditators think about, you know, crutches
I
like
know.
That, but for me it really helped.
Yeah.
And I'm still trying to figure out how to reclaim my mornings with a 2-year-old
I'm
in
sure,
my life.
Yeah, that's a tricky one for sure, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, I know, like, you know, hearing about people's, you know, miracle mornings and different things like
mm-hmm.
that, and it always leaves me asking this question, well, how? And
I
even though it doesn't matter, she gets up at 5 and I can't get up really
no.
early. So I'm looking for other ways, maybe looking at bedtime, I don't
yeah,
know.
I know, it's hard. I know my mom was telling
yeah.
me that somebody, a friend of hers, gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning every day to meditate. And I was like, okay, maybe one day I can get there, but not
yeah.
now. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, what time do you have to go to bed, you know, at that
totally.
Point?
Then it's like you have to reschedule your entire everything
yeah.
just for that, yeah.
I know. Yeah.
It's difficult,
for,
yeah.
For sure, yeah. So, you know, my last couple of questions, to wrap up, I wanted to circle back, actually, to the building of Dolly and Oatmeal
mm-hmm.
again. So dive into your success story a little bit, because I think that a lot of people aspire to blogging or writing full time, and it's an elusive goal. It's hard,
yeah, it is.
Hard to do. So once you posted your first post,
mm-hmm.
what was the progression like? So you know that point in every blogger's life when they stop feeling like they're writing to the void.
Yeah, to your mom, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so what was the progression of Dolly and Oatmeal?
I guess I had started it out, you know, just documenting kind of things, and mm-hmm. I wasn't even doing it, like, that often. I was kind of doing it here and there. And then I started posting recipes once a week, and it actually, I'm kind of structured like that, and I was like,
yep.
I'm going to post every Wednesday, because that was just how it started, and I still post every Wednesday, just, I don't know, I'm just a person who sticks to routine or whatever, but that's what I did, and from there, I, you know, had, like, a bunch of blogs that I loved, and I loved reading, and I, you know, took inspiration from. And I would make comments on their blogs, or I would follow them on social media, and you know, I think from there there are certain people who, you know, would acknowledge, you know, whatever work I was doing, and or word of mouth is a big, you know, is another thing. But I think networking mm-hmm. is a big highlight, you know, networking with people and putting yourself out there and not being afraid to do that, I guess. And I'm not somebody who, you know, I feel like I toot my own horn, but you have to, if you want people to see your work, you have to be able to, I guess, toot your own horn a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I think, you know, a lot of people have, like, awesome things to offer and to say, and sometimes, you know, it's like it doesn't get seen or heard, and
mm-hmm.
so, yeah, I guess, you know, that can be a bummer,
mm-hmm.
but I think from there, I mean, Food 52 was always really supportive of, like, stuff that I did, so
okay.
I would have to thank them for that, And also just surrounding yourself with, I mean, everybody who I've met, either in person or, you know, through email correspondence or social media, everybody is just so supportive of one another, which is, it's such a fun environment to be in and a positive environment. So yeah, I would say reach out, you know, that's another thing. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to reach out. I feel like everybody is here to like learn from one another and to collaborate. And so, yeah, I guess I did that in my own way too. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope I answered your question.
No, you did. So you would say when you talk about reaching out and networking, these are things that you're doing online. So
yeah.
Through commenting on other people's blogs, people that you admire with similar audiences, and then also through social media. I mean, that's an obvious one. But
mm-hmm.
those are the main, for you, those are the main avenues to do that networking.
Yeah, I would say so. And then also finding, I guess I didn't find them. We all kind of found each other, but, you know, just a close-knit kind of group of women that we've all kind of come together and really supported one another and always there to give each other, you know, kudos and recognition. And so, like I said, you know, don't be scared, I guess, to reach out to people. Like if you like, you know, their blog post or you have related to something that they've written about, you know, emails. Mm-hmm. I love getting emails from people. And I've emailed a couple, you know, people who have written pieces that, you know, have moved me or I've, you know, been inspired mm-hmm. by. And it's just, you know, doing like how you would do, I guess, in real life, you know, if somebody, you know, gave a speech at the end of it and at the end of the speech, you really enjoyed it, you would go up to them and say, wow, what a great, you know, what a great speech. I loved, you know, this about it. And so, yeah, that's kind of, I guess, like, I try to be true to it too, you know, like, I don't,
mm-hmm.
like, there are some people who I guess, like, can kind of comment on everything, but like,
yeah.
you know, and not to say that that's a bad thing, but, you know, just be true to what you like and what speaks to you and stuff. So, yeah.
Right. Yes, of course. So then Food 52, is that some of the freelance work that you mentioned before? So you write for them and that's how they supported you, or they just like reposted your articles, your recipes
and that kind of thing? Yeah, they just started, you know, if you're familiar, I know you're familiar with Food 52, but one of their mm-hmm. articles is the 8 food blog links we love this week. And so I remember that was like one of the first things that they like ever recognized in mine. So that was
nice.
A big thrill. And then, and then from there, it was just, you know, randomly, I guess people had just seen, you know, a post here and there of mine. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I always get asked like, what are your statistics and what are your, you know, this and that. And I'm like, I don't know. And then people are like, you're going to have to start knowing these things. And I'm just like, it's just such a foreign kind of concept, but.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really tricky one. I mean, I know that I try not to get too wrapped up in things like that because it can really, when you do great work and you do work that really resonates with you and that you're proud of, and then the statistics don't quite meet your expectations,
right.
then it's just, it can drag you down
Absolutely.
So much.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to distance yourself from that. But then, you know, there are certain things like when you look into monetizing your blog
mm-hmm.
or if you look at, you know, ways to earn a living from your blog, usually those are things you need to know.
Right.
So it is. And you know, it's, unless people are leaving comments on your blog and you can see those go up, there's really no other way to know
right.
if you're, you know, if you're reaching more people.
Absolutely.
And it's sort of, there's a buzz in the air and you can feel it
mm-hmm.
usually, but it's just, you know, there's, so that's a tricky one for sure.
Yeah.
So then, you know, that's another question I had for you. So right now there's no advertising on Dolly and Oatmeal that I can see.
No,
so
we're kind of in the process of, I don't know, dealing with that. So we'll see.
Yeah, because what other avenues are there to earn a living then? Is it strictly the freelance work that you talked about before?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And, I mean, I've just basically been doing like a bunch of freelance work for like blogs. And then also like here in Brooklyn, I have a community of people that I've been doing some work for. So, so it's been interesting because people recognize me from Dolly and O'Meal, but I, you know, live down the street from them kind of thing. So it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, that's good. And so how do you find those opportunities? Do they come to you because of Dolly and O'Meal, or are you seeking them out, or is it a bit of both?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. So I just I started out with somebody contacting me, and then from there they referred me actually to somebody else. And I got the idea of just putting my name out there with in terms of, you know, people in my neighborhood. So it's been kind of, I guess, organic in that way. I haven't but it's interesting also because, you know, they'll find me like through Dolly and O'Meal, but you know, we're just all so close to each other. So it's been interesting. It's a very, very interesting world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I know. It turns out that it's such a small world.
It really is.
I mean, I know that everyone says that, but when you really get into your own niche industry, it's just so true.
It totally is. Yeah.
So what advice then would you offer someone interested in pursuing blogging full time and growing their own little blog, which right now is very much just a hobby, and making it something that can pay the bills?
I would say that definitely you need to, you know, have like a long-term, like not goal, but just that, you know, from the beginning, I didn't think I would ever be not teaching and I'd ever be,
right,
you know, doing this full time. But, I always sought it as a creative outlet, and I really loved, like getting behind the camera, and I love like the whole process of creating a post and, just like putting a couple thoughts down on the post or, you know, whatever it was. And so just, yeah, having that, like that long-term goal of something that you want to sustain and that you want, that means something to you. So that, like, first and foremost. And then I also think that, you know, creating a community of people around you, whether like-minded or not, but that are, you know, supporting you and you're supporting them and you all believe in each other's work. And social media plays a huge role in things. You know, growing your brand and having a clear set kind of idea of who you are and what you're bringing to the table kind of thing. So, you know, and your voice is always something that, you know, people want to read what you're doing or, interested in how you prepare something. So a clear, voice, I would say is also something that's important.
Right. Yeah. And actually that question, you know, that thought about finding your voice, that's a question that I had, that I wanted to ask you, and I haven't yet, but so it sounds like though for you, finding a voice was more about figuring out what was important to you and then staying true to that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the most authentic way to do it anyway, but you know, it doesn't always come easy because sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees, right? It's just so, you're just so used to it.
Totally.
You are who you are, and it's hard. It's tough to see that from, you know, from a different perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It was not. It's not an easy thing.
Yeah,
I know it sounds easy to say it, but it's definitely not easy.
No, it isn't. And then staying true is so hard too, because you know you see so many. That's the nature of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You see so many incredible things, and it's tempted. You are tempted so often to sort of sway one way or another.
Right.
But having the discipline to stay true is a really good practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, what's next? What's next for Dolly and O'Meal?
I am just going to continue, you know, pursuing my freelance work, and then, you know, obviously my blog, and looking into hopefully monetizing it one day. But I've just signed a book deal with a publishing agency here in the city. So,
fantastic.
Yeah,
congratulations. I was hoping you'd mention that.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it. It's
yeah,
like I
course.
Haven't signed the dotted line yet, so it's like
Okay.
You know, but no, it's, you know, there's a clear deal and everything's going forward. But yeah, so I'm super, super stoked about that. And yeah, I'm excited. I'll be talking more about it in the next couple of months. But yeah,
right,
so that's been really, really, I mean, I can't probably say enough how exciting that is. So
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh my goodness. I mean, I'll say it again. Congratulations. That's a huge deal. I mean, I know I said in one of my earlier interviews that having a book published is just such a milestone in anyone's career. And it really seems like the food blogging world is having a moment right now.
It really is. I know.
It's nice. It's nice to see so much sort of talent showcased. And you know, what I love about it is that so much of that community is an amateur community. When I say amateur, I don't mean that in terms of skill level. I mean it in terms of, you know, you're not a trained chef, but you're getting these fantastic opportunities. And that's what I love about our world now.
I know.
I mean, you can seize anything that you want. It's all there and available to you mostly.
Yeah.
It's just,
it's super rewarding.
Yeah. So then did you, again, did they reach out to you, or did you write a book proposal and sort of do the process of that formally, or what was that like for you?
They approached me, but I did write like a proposal. They wanted that, so I think any publishing company would want that. But yeah, so that's basically how it went. They came to me, so yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So they came to you, and then you had to sort of firm up your thoughts. But that's, as you said, that's standard. And
yeah.
But how nice to have a foot in the door just to even begin, instead of having to shop it around. I mean, that can be a painful process.
Yeah, like I never even really, I mean, I always dreamed about, you know, the idea of, oh, a book. But, you know, it was never part of something that I was, you know, thinking about that I was going to put together and do. So the fact that, I mean, this is just such an amazing opportunity. So, yeah.
No kidding. And so when will it be published? Do you know yet?
Sometime next year. We're not really sure. So like, I'm assuming summer, fall of next year, but we'll see.
Like 2016 or
2015?
Yeah. These things take a while.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah. Well, that's fantastic. I can't wait. I'm going to definitely stay posted, and I know you'll keep me up to date.
Totally. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, well, Lizzie, that's all that I had lined up for today.
Okay.
And did you have anything you wanted to add or sort of share to close? Or how can people, what is the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Definitely if they wanted... through my blog. And from there, I love, big fan of Instagram. So,
Yeah. Okay. So if someone wanted to reach out and send you a quick note, better to do it on Instagram than Twitter?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. All right. And it's just @DollyNoteMill?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much,
thank
Lindsay.
You,
I really appreciate your time.
And I can't wait
great
to see where the PGM in season, all that good stuff goes.
So that concludes my talk with Lindsay. Thank you again for listening. If you aren't already familiar with Lindsay's blog, definitely go visit and be prepared to add her to your list of favorite food bloggers. You can find her at dollyandoatmeal.com. If you wanted to re-listen to any part of the show or look up any of the resources we talked about, you can do that at puregreenmag.com/podcast/Lindsay. We've included handy timestamps to help you navigate the show. And don't forget to check out the links to the Pure Green in Season project. We are so crazy excited about it and know you will be too. This podcast is created by Pure Green Magazine. Go to puregreenmag.com to order a copy of our latest issue or to subscribe. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.